Well, let's look at the Mishnah on Daf Yudalet Amud Beis. It's about 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Can you see it, Amar Rav Yossi?
Yes.
Maisa b'tinokes sheyarda lamalos mayim min ha'ayin. So the Mishnah records a story, an unfortunate story, of a young girl. And the question is why the Mishnah has to tell us she's a tinokes. Maybe we'll figure that one out. And she was going out to fill water from the ayin. The ayin is like a well of some sort. Rashi calls it a mayon. And nensa. She was raped. And the question here is whether a kohen is allowed to marry this girl.
Is there a legal definition of tinokes age-wise?
I don't think so, but I usually sense that a tinokes is less than bas mitzvah.
Less than even...
She's not chusim gimel, because then she's certainly mitaris l'kuhuna. So she's probably somewhere in the age bracket between 3 and 12. I'm just guessing. I can't promise you.
Yeah, 12 to 12 and a half is Nara.
Right. So from the age of 12, she would definitely be believed to tell us, because the issue here is who is the Boel. Now let's put some cards on the table. If the Boel is a non-Jew, then she's psul kahuna. She can no longer marry a kohen. If he's Jewish, then in most cases she can marry a kohen, with the exception of what's called a nosin or a mamzer. Nesinim and mamzerim, which are psule kol, if they would have had relations with her, again here in this case the boel is not to be found, so we don't identify him, but if it was a nosin or mamzer, or for that matter goy, is then she becomes what's called a zona l'kuhuna, through no fault of her own, but that's just the way it is. So what do we do in this case of safek, where we don't know and we cannot identify the boel? Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, im rov anshei ha'ir masiyin l'kuhuna, harezu tinasi l'kuhuna. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri introduces the concept of rov. The Torah says achrei ravim lahatos, and presumably one of the members of the city went out to this mayon and he did what he did, and if we cannot identify that person, we should assume he came from the rov. If the rov is masiyan l'kuhuna, that means it's rov yisraelim, unless it's a city where there's an unusual proportion of mamzerim, but let's leave that out for the time being. Then we can assume that the Boel was a Jew, and she remains a Ksheira L'Kuhuna. Rashi says here, three lines up from the bottom of the page, in Rov Ha'ir, Ksheirim Lahasi Benoseim V'Almenoseim L'Kuhuna. Now there's a normal case, we're talking about a Kosher, whose daughter is Ksheira. And Rashi is coming lafuki, a case of a posel, because the daughter of a posel, let's say if he's a chol or lakuna, cannot marry a kohen. Or if this man was married to a woman and he subsequently died, she, the almana, could marry a kohen. Of course, Rashi doesn't talk about a case of a grusha, and that's obvious, because a grusha can never marry a kohen. But if she was an almana, then she could marry a kohen. She'ein rov b'nei ha'ir min ha'psulim min ha'poslim isha lakuna b'biyasan. Assuming that the rov here is not poslim b'biyasan, afzu tinase l'kuhuna. So the good news is that she can marry a kohen, but the bad news is that you have to make sure that there's a rov. If there's no rov, she can't marry a kohen.
What's the halacha of a woman who had a consensual relationship, not nenas, not grusha?
Well, there's going to be a case that we're going to discuss in the Gemara itself, where she might be believed to identify the Boel. In other words, if she had a consenting relationship, and you're not talking about a married woman, are you?
No, but not then, right?
Because if she's a married woman, then she can never marry a Kohen, even if the Baal was a kosher, it was a Jew, but if it was anybody but her husband. But assuming, let's say, she's a Pnuya, she's not married, and she had this consenting relationship, she might be believed to identify the Boel. And that's going to be this Gemara itself. Omale Rava L'Rav Nachman. Rava turns to Rav Nachman, he says, our mission of Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, Di Omar Keman. Now, when the Gemara introduces Di Omar Keman, it's reminding us of an old machlokas. And the argument is going to be that within the context of that old machlokas between Rabbi X and Rabbi Y, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri does not fit into either shita. We only know of two shitas, and none of them rely on Rav. And what are the two shitas? One shita is going to be Rabbi Gamliel, and we'll soon see that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't even require a Rav. And if you have a doubt as to whether or not a woman had an incident which would disqualify for a kahuna, then hamed isha acheskasa. A woman has a cheskas kashus le kahuna. And until you know proof positive, until you know for sure that something changed and made her into a psul le kahuna, you have a right to assume that she remains ksher le kahuna. That's going to be the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel against Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua is going to say that, you know what? I'm not going to rely on Sfeikus. I'm not going to allow her to marry a Kohen based on the fact that, well, we don't know. Let's leave her as she is. She was Ksher Lakuna, Hamidi Shalfes Kosa. Rabbi Yeshua rejects all that. And he says that even if you have a rov to tell you that she's Ksher Lakuna, once the suffix became a bona fide suffix, we're not going to be machria, we're not going to rely on rov. So let's first read the Gemara inside. The Gemara says the following. Ikirab Gamliel, if Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would rely or agree with the shita of Rabbi Gamliel, is afilu berov psulim nami machshir. Then Rabbi Gamliel's of the opinion that once you have an isha b'chezkasa, hamed isha chezkasa, and you don't passel her, even if there's a rov against it, even a rov is not strong enough to undermine the status of kashrus.
But the bia, doesn't the bia do anything to the
chazaka? Well, as long as we don't know the nature of the bia, was it a bia haposeles because the boel was a posel, or was it a bia she'ena poselis because the boel was a kosher? We don't know either way. So when you have, I'll give you an example, and this example we go in the other direction, l'chumra. Let's say you have a suffix as to whether this mikvah has 40 saw, and a tamei goes into the mikvah. So here we're going to say again, hamed tamei al cheska. So he had a cheska's tumor. Now he jumps into the mikvah. You don't know whether the mikvah could take him out of that state of tumah. He remains tameh. And that's the first sugya in Masech the Nida. Ah, you'll ask me, but he jumped into a mikvah. Yeah, but we don't know what that mikvah did or didn't do, what it could have done or couldn't have done. Because we have doubts about the status of the mikvah. Here too, we have doubts about the status of the boil. Did it transform or change our status? So we say no. We don't assume that our status has changed. That's the sheet of Rabban Gamliel. And therefore, in our case, of the Tinoko Sheyarda Lamalos Mayim Bimayon, right? She went down ala Ayin, and then we don't know. She was Ksheir Lakuna until this Maisa happened. Now you have a doubt who the Boel was. Is if Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would adopt the position of Rav Gamliel, there's no need to introduce Rov. He didn't have to say in Rov, Ha'ir Masi and Lakuna, she's Muteris Lakuna. We would have said, Uki gavra cheskaso, she has a cheskas kashrus, and if I can assume that the bowl was certainly kosher, even if there wasn't a rove. On the other hand, says the Gemara, the other shita is that of Rabbi Yeshua. Ikar Rabbi Yeshua, afilu barov ksheirim nami posel. Rabbi Yeshua himself is going to say that even if there were rove ksheirim etzla, she becomes posel. And Rabbi Yeshua is going to say, once there's a suffix, we don't rely even on rov. So nobody has a rov here. The machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua is, do we rely on chazaka, and therefore we don't even need a rov, because she had a cheskas kshera? Or do we say that once there's a suffix, we got to deal with the suffix itself? The chazaka is not going to tell me anything about the suffix. Well, like Evan said before, you know, after all, she had this be'ila. And we have to deal with the Be'ila. Don't tell me what she was before the Be'ila. That doesn't tell me a thing.
Rabbi Yeshua is in the Deraisa, because it's trying to say.
Oh, interesting. That's interesting. So the truth of the matter is that the Gemara establishes back here, and that's going to be something that we'll cover later on Daf Yud Gimel, something called Maila Asu B'Yuchsin, which means that Rabbi Yeshua is arguing against Rabbi Gamliel because of Kahuna. When it came to Kahuna, there were many takanos that were made to guarantee the purity of Kahuna, one of which was that once there's a suffek, and you don't know if this person is allowed to marry Kohen, not allowed to marry Kohen, Maila Asu B'Yuchsin. They raised the bar with regard to Yuchsin. As soon as there's a suffek, we're not going to be matir. In fact, the Gemara goes as far as to say that even in a certain case called Sfek Sfeika, which is the famous case of Almonas Isa, right, we have a Sufik Chol, and not only that, the Sufik Chol gets mixed up in a Taroves, and so on, possibly even there, we would say my loss of the Yuchsin and not rely on Sfek Sfeika. But be that as it may, since our Mishnah is addressing the case of Kohuna, that's the issue on the table, can a Kohen marry this girl? Therefore, the Gemara assumes that according to Rabbi Yeshua, the answer is a blatant no. She cannot marry a Kohen. Kohenim, stay away. And why? Because of my loss of the Yuchsin. On the other hand, Rabbi Gamliel doesn't accept this principle of my loss of the Yuchsin. He doesn't operate with it. Now, Tosis raises the question, Rabbi Gamliel doesn't operate with my loss of the Yuchsin because of a different reason. And that's called Tainas Bari. Tainas Bari means if we have no objective way of knowing one way or the other, let's listen to the person, in this case herself. Let her tell us what happened. In fact, Tosis here, we're talking about a Tinokas. A Tinokas apparently is too young to have a Tainas Bari. And even if she was old enough, who says that she recognizes the Boel? You know, it was a very unfortunate episode. And therefore Tosis questions the whole premise of this Gemara that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't require a rov over him. You're right. Rabbi Gamliel doesn't require a rov. Let's take the following case where Rabbi Gamliel would be mekil, even though there's no rov. Let's say you have a case of an arusa, as we've discussed dozens of times. There's erusin and there's nesuin with a separation of how long?
A
year. Let's say a woman who's an arusa becomes pregnant during that 12-month period. We don't know who the Boel was. Now, if it was the Oris himself, then that's not called a Bia Haposelis Lekuhuna. And if, let's say, after they consummate the marriage or whatever happens, he dies, she can marry Cohen. But what happens if she had Bia with someone other than the Oris? Then she had a Bias Nus, which passes her as a Zona for Cohen. And now the question is, we ask her, in the language of the Mishnah, Mativa shall ubar zu, you're carrying a fetus in your stomach, who was the Boel? Who's the father of this fetus? And Rabbi Gamliel says that since we don't know who is the father of the, if she comes forth and says, it's the Arus, he's the one who's responsible for this situation, she's believed. Says Tosfos, even though in this case there's no rov, because Adarav, if you take all the potential Boelim in the world and you line them up, there's only one that would guarantee that she remains Ksheira Lekuna. That's the Oris himself. So the Rov now, by very far margin, is going against her. But nevertheless, Rav Gamliel says, she's believed with the Tainan's Bari. She's the one, she can identify the Boel, and then the Gemara goes through the whole sugya. What if the Oris himself denies it? And that becomes very, very complicated. It's her word against his word. But Tosa says, you see the Rav Gamliel is operating with a Tainus Bari.
Is it linked to Eidach of Nem Misurin? Is it, how does that, Eidus, on what basis does the Bari work?
That's a great question. And for that we'll have to learn the Sugya Daf Yud Gimel. But what I wanted to point out to you here on this Mishnah is, now we're talking. My wife is not home yet, so we got to, my daughter's filling in. You know that on the Mishnayis, there are a zillion Pirushim, but my favorite is what's called Tosus Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger always comes up with a real chap, and here is no exception. It's a very short Rabbi Kiveger. It's in Tosus Mishnayis. In this particular edition, they have it actually published in the back. This is the Oz Vahada Gemara. He says the following. You know what? Instead of reading it, I'm going to just present the scenario, and you're going to tell me what Rabbi Kiveger is going to say. It's the beautiful chah. Rabbi Kiveger wants to know the following. There are 101 people in the city. 51 of them are goyim lomazag, are poslim lakuna bibiyasam. 50 are ksherim. So far, so good. What's the status of the girl at this point before Rabbi Kiveger? Can she marry Kohen?
Yeah.
No. It's 51 are psuim against 50. Okay. Fine. Now let me read it to you inside. What happens, ask Rabbi Kiveger, if instead of having 51 psulim and 50 ksherim, let's switch it around. Says Rabbi Kiveger, what if there are 51 ksherim and 50 psulim? Can she marry a kohen?
We in Rabbi Gamliel.
I mean, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, im rov ha'ir ksherim lakuna, masim lakuna, tinasi lakuna. 51 ksherim and 50 up soon. It's the same number, 101, just was switching around. Yeah. So, what he says?
Rove.
Rabbi Goldstein, you be Masada Kedusha to a Kohen?
Sure.
Okay. But here's where Rabbi Kiveger steps in. What happens if one of those 51 Ksherim is the Kohen who comes to Rabbi Goldstein and say, be Makadish me to this woman, you be Masada Kedusha? He himself knows that he wasn't the Boel. Memela says Rabbi Kiveger, if he knows he's not the Boel, then when he looks out at this city, what does he see in front of him?
No rov.
50-50. There's no rov. Nearly, says Rabbi Kiveger, Dim harov odef al hamit rak bi echad, di yesh lamashal nun aleph ksherim, 51 ksherim v'nun psulim, di bazeh asura lekoin echad mi osa ha'ir, da hu yodea bi atzmo, shehu lo ba'al leho. V'im kain, who ain't a bechlal a suffik? Ulegabi didi nisharak mechzal mechza shaomdim besuffik 50-50. V'ain't a yochel litlos berov v'chidush ze lo nimtzo mefurosh misha medaber misa. Now, why is Rabbi Kiveger add that line? This is what I call the anava of Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger is saying that, you know what? This logic is absolutely compelling, but I didn't find anyone who said it. Now look, if you were the genius that Rabbi Kiveger was, the Gadol Hadar, why would you hesitate here and add this, you know, what do they call it, a caveat, or what was the word I was looking for, you know, you add a disclaimer, you know, and you write, no one wrote on this topic, you know. And I just want to add a story here. I love, love this story. Rabbi Kiveger married off his daughter, who was known in the whole of Poland as a great tzaddikas, to the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, in his second marriage, was a son-in-law of Rabbi Kivega. And there's a famous letter that Rabbi Kivega writes to his future son-in-law before the shidduch was clinched. And in the letter, he testifies about his daughter, what a tzaddikah she is. She's incredible, and her chesed and so forth. But then he writes, however, I know that kvodo, he talks to the Chassam Sofer in third person, is definitely Makayim, the dictum of the Gemara in Pesachim, and the Gemara says, Li olam yisa adam bas talmid chacham. A man should be sure to marry a bas talmid chacham. Vanochi ani eini talmid chacham, and therefore I don't know what to tell you about this shidduch. Imagine, Rav Kivega is so, he so much wants the Chassam Sofer for a son-in-law, but he says, I have to tell you the honest truth. Ich bin ich der Talmud Chacham. So the Chassam Sofer writes back to him. And he, you know, Kvod, you know, Rabbi Kivega, he writes to him that you tell me about your daughter, that she's a tzaddikis. I trust you impeccably, 100%. You're not, you are trustworthy in my eyes, like 1,000 witnesses. But would you write about yourself that you're not a Talmud Chacham? Einat ha-nemon b'einai. But, says the Chassam Sofer, I don't know if you should marry off your daughter to me, because the same Gemara in Pesachim says that the man should sell the shirt off his back to marry off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham, and I'm not a Talmud Chacham. These are the Chilufei Mechtal. It's like unbelievable. At the end, Baruch Hashem, they got married.
Coming back to the Chiddush of the Kireya.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the words of the Mishnah,
yeah.
It says Imrev Anshim Masina the Kuna Harizut Nazar Kohen. It's not subjective based on that he knows something different.
Right, it seems like the Mishnah is just calculating, you know, it's taking a census.
It is as if we're making it subjective between him and her. He knows it that
right.
I think,
just to defend Rabbi Kivega, I understand your point, Daniel. Rabbi Kivega is saying the Mishnah doesn't address the question, what about the Kohen himself who's in this mixture, you know? What does he see in front of him? And not only that, maybe the Mishnah is not talking about a case of a row of 51 to 50, you know, with one. But anyway, this is what I found. In the back of the Gemaras, there's something called the Rashash. Okay? The Chidushei Rashash. And the Rashash writes the following. He says, B'Mishnah, Im Rov Anshei Ha'ir Masim Lakuna, Kosav Tosus Rabbi Kivega, Imhaya nun aleph ksherim v'nun psulin, ubanun aleph hayakoin echad sherotzal aseisa asurala. He's not allowed to marry her because he knows he's not included in the suffolk, and therefore he's got 50 keneged 50. Kevod sheyodei be'atzmo shalavaleh in kain ein hu bechval hasuffolk v'lo nisha rak mechza al mechza ein shal. Vihinen, Harav Zal, meaning Rav Kivega, Zechon Levracha, because again the Rashash is way later than Rav Kivega, by 100 years, he says, Nira, it seems, Dimedamile, he's comparing our Mishnah, Lehadisnan, Biperigdalid, Detrumos, Mishnah Ches, U Mishnah Tes, Bilavonos, Ushchoros. Okay? The Mishnah there wants to know what's the status of this mixture, and the Mishnah says that in order to get rov and be matir, let's say, you separate the white ones from the black ones. You know, you can't use the black ones to be mavatil the white ones, even if the black ones are heter, and some Easter fell into the taropas. And that has to do with Truman Chulin, and various other cases. Avolanis daiti nira de dafka le'inyin bitol lo mahani osam she'enom bechlal asofik. Says the Rashash, if you have a mixture, you can't add the black ones, the mevatel, the white ones, because the black ones are outside the sofik. And therefore, it's not part of the tarovis. The tarovis is that which is not nikar, you know, that which you can't see. You have white ones, and you can't see which one is also, they all look the same. Aval inyan rov is called the parish miruva parish, mahani, afilu la'osan she'enam bechlal asafik. In other words, like you were saying before, Daniel, let's look at the city. We're going to divide it up into its ksherim and into its psulim. And now we're going to say that the boel, unidentified, is poresh from the rov. This kohen, insofar as he was part of the potential boelim, he also could have been the one who was poresh in theory. Now he's added to this calculation of 50. He becomes number 51. And he himself engenders the rov. Once the rov is engendered, I automatically have a right to say that Kol D'Parish Mu'Parish, the one who came out of this rov, is the Boel. And what was the rov? The rov was Rov Ksherim. And he goes on to say, Ulefima Shekasavti, are you ready for this one? Nearly, the im bechanut achat ksheira. You've got a kosher butcher store. Hayu mem chatichos merubos. Okay, so the butcher produces both square pieces of meat and triangular pieces of meat. The eser mishulosho. So the kosher butcher store has 40 chatichos merubos that are square, and 10 that are triangle. Ubechanus ha-trefa lo hoya ela chof chatichos. There were 20 chatichos in the non-kosher butcher store. Aval kula mishuloshos. They're all triangular. Nu rabosa, in terms of calculating triangular pieces of meat, where's the rov? Did you have the numbers? Should I go over it once more? Yeah. In the kosher butcher shop, there's 40 and 10. Everything's kosher, but 40 are square and 10 are triangular. In the trefa butcher shop, there are 20 triangular pieces of meat. They're all treif. Now you find the nimtzeis chaticha mishuleshes. He finds a triangular piece of meat. What would you say, Rabosa?
Treif, me on the street.
What?
Where's that meat piece of meat found?
On the street. He finds on the street. Right, right. So it's called the parish ruva parish, right? So what would you say is the status of the meat?
Treif.
Kshera.
Katsushos.
Kshera.
Oh, because it's not
telling. Another, he himself also adds the humility at the end. You know, I'm getting a little nervous here.
What's the sfar then?
Because it's 15 to 20.
There are 50 kosher pieces of meat in the town, right?
Square and 10.
But actually, 40 inch. What do we say? Yeah, 50. And there are 20 trefa pieces of meat. So the rove is with a kosher piece of meat.
Right.
And basically, I think here that L'chora the Rashash is making a gigantic jump here. I think there's a little bit of a gap.
Yeah.
What do I mean? In the first case, you know, you had this Kohen who wants to marry this girl. He is initially in the Suffolk, and at the time that the episode, unfortunate episode, happens, he is included statistically in the Suffolk. That's one thing.
Right.
But if I find a piece of triangular meat, then the pieces of square meat, the merubos, are not b'chlal asafik to begin with. I think the Rashash is saying something unbelievable. That rov is not logical.
Mm-hmm.
That rov is a halacha. You remember we had a similar discussion once about sveksveka. What is sveksveka? Is sveksveka just a calculation? Well, there's 50-50, and then amongst the 50, I can break it down to another 50-50, and now I got 75 against 25. Is that just the game of sveksveka? Or no? Or sveksveka is a whole new halacha. You need one suffik, and then you need another suffik. And Tosis makes all sorts of calculations, if you remember, with a katana, the pitu katana ones, so maybe we could add to the percentage points of an ones and set up a sveksveka. Tosis says, no, you need shnei shemos. And at the end of the day, whether she was a gdola and then so, she was a ptuya and a ktana and pitu ktana onesu, it's always going to be the same shema ones. You see that Tosis is working with an abstract definition of what sveksveka is. Here too, I think the Rashash is introducing, and it's counterintuitive, an abstract definition of rov. You and I would say rov is statistical. Well, what are the statistical chances that this triangular piece of meat is kosher? They're one out of three. Did I get that right? 1 out of 3, 10 against 20. Says Rosh Hashanah, that's not how rov operates. Rov operates with a halachic construct. Yeah. And in halachic terms, we're going to differentiate between one category and another category. There's sach hakol two categories. There's the kosher meat, and there's non-kosher meat. There's no such thing, al pi halacha, this guy decides to produce it in this square, in this triangle, in this form. That's irrelevant. Rov is established by halachic categories. And Memela, Rabbi Kiva Eger, I think, would disagree with the Rashash in his conclusion with regard to the triangular piece of meat that he found with a Kal V'chomer. Because if Rabbi Kiva Eger says that the Kohen himself is not part of the Rov, even though, again, anticipating from the get-go this, you know, somebody being Poresh, the Kohen was included in the Suffolk, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, but Rov is statistical. Statistical probabilities, from the Kohen's perspective at least, is 50-50. He doesn't have a Rov. How much more so, when I look at this triangular piece of meat, the statistical probabilities are that it's treif. Is Rafosa, I'm so nispoil here, that tucked away in this Mishnah, at the end of the first parak of Ksubis, is a gigantic machlokas. I begin to think that this machlokas about the nature of rov, it is probably in its repercussions amazing. You could think of 1,001 cases. You know, there may be runners who wear red sneakers, and there may be runners who wear white sneakers. And Rabbi Kivega will say, well, if you're doubting, you know, red or white, then separate between the two. And the Rosh Hashanah is going to say, what difference does it make what color sneakers he wears? That's not halachic category.
The Shmaitzer talking about this is his
sounds his like it, but you know the Shmaitzer Torah was before both Rabbi Kivega and the Rosh Hashanah, so I'm not sure if he was aware. In any event, let's take a look at the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav, we're now in Tefzvav Amen Av. Bikronos Shaltzipori Hoya Maisa. Where did this story take place? The Mishnah itself doesn't tell us. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav has a raya that it took place in the Kronos Shaltzipori. Now, Kronos are these wagons, you know, like the caravans, that contain all the merchandise in them. And you can imagine that there was, in the big metropolis, there was a market day. And all these Kronos came in to the city of Tzipori, somewhere up in the north. And if you look at Rashi says, Biyomashuk, Sheseos Vishayoros Mimokam Acher Bo Shom. In other words, what's unique here about this case in our Mishnah, we'll see how that kicks in to understand Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, is that we have an additional factor, an additional variable here. We're not just dealing with the members of the city and who was the boel that was Poresh, but we're dealing with an influx of people from the outside who, although maybe they don't enter into the city, but they reach the shayots reach the shuk, and that's where this maisa took place. So now we have to see what's the significance of that ukimta. Ukir Rabbi Ami, the Omer Rabbi Ami, Vehu shall hoisa seya shall bnei adam ksherim overis l'sham. Now watch this. We have now the rove of the city is made up of ksherim. The rove of the seya are those travelers who came in from outside the city in order to participate in the market. They also are made up of rove ksherim. Ukidur aviyanai the omer aviyani niv elis bekronos. If she had the bia in the karon, which literally means in the wagon, is ksher lakuna. What does that mean? Bikronos salkadaita. Are you taking that literally? That's where the bia took place? No, says the Gemara. El nivelis bishas kronos. Ksher lakuhuna. Why is it bishas kronos ksher lakuhuna? Apparently, Rashi says on the fourth line, v'hu shehoisa seyeshel b'neyam ksher Now we're assuming that the boel came from these seiros, and the seiros were made up of mostly ksherim. So the Gemara says, Aval pirish echad mitzipore ubaal. If we have knowledge that the boel came out of the city of Tzipori, and we know he's from the city, one of the city dwellers, is even if Tzipori is made up of majority ksherim, nevertheless, Havlad Shtuki. Shtuki means we send him away from Kahuna. We don't know his status. Ki ha, dechi asar avdimi amar avzi'iri, amar avchanina, vi'amrile amar avziri, amar avchanina, holchen acharov ha'ir, vi'ena holchen acharov se'ah. So the original version is very difficult because it sounds like if one of the members of Tzipori was Porish in Boel, then she's Muteris Lakuda. We just finished saying no. You need the Rov Seah. Klape Laya. And the Gemara says it's more logical to say the opposite. Why? Hani Naidi Vahaini Kvi Vakaima. Okay, we'll come back to that line in just a minute. That's going to be the famous distinction between Kavua and Parish. Ella, says the Gemara, Holchin acharov ha'ir v'hu de'ika rov se'ah b'hada. If you can combine two roves, you got the rov from the city and the rov from the se'ah, the people from outside the city, then from Yochanan ben Nuri and our Mishnah allows this woman to marry a Kohen. V'ein holchin acharov ha'ir grey dasa, meaning if we only have one rove, because we know that the bow was parish from the city, that's not enough to be mad to this woman. V'lo acharov se'ah grey dasa. If we only have the rove se'ah because we can identify, we know for sure that the bow came from the se'ah, is then that also is not reliable. And basically what the Gemara is saying, and if you take a look at Rashi, at the very bottom of Daf Yudalad Amid Beis, Amalei, Rashi says, Li Olam Ki Rabbi Yeshua. Actually, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in our Mishnah reflects the sheet of Rabbi Yeshua. You remember we said that Rabbi Yeshua holds that we don't rely on Rov. But Hacha, here even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that we can rely on Rov. Why? Mishum De'ika Trey Rubi Lekashrus Akshera. In other words, now we have two roves that would determine that she is a ksheira. A bosai.
Strange roves.
What are these two roves? Does it change the probability that the bowl is a kosher? Again, either the bowl came from the seo or the bowl came from the ear. In either case, you still have the same rove. The percentage points of probability have not changed at all. Ki who's it? Again, I'm tempted to think, like the Rashash, that rove is some sort of halach over here. And that even though one rove together with another rove doesn't change the reality on the ground, you know, the mitzius bashetach, as we say, but nevertheless, halachically it changes because you have one rove here, one rove there. And this would make sense even according to Rabbi Yeshua, meaning Rabbi Yeshua, when it comes to kahuna, flexes the or activates the principle of Maila Asu B'Yuchsin, but the Gemara says that even Rabbi Yeshua would be satisfied by two roves.
But rove by its nature is a percentage. That's the nature of rove.
Right, but once that percentage is set up, now you have a rove. The question is how you go about setting up that rove. The Sheet of Rabbi Kvega is it's all based on probability theory. The sheet of the Rashash is that it's based on halachic categories. But once you set up a rove, now the rove operates on its own. And as far as Maila Asu V'Yuchsin is concerned, where Rabbi Yeshua says for Kahuna we want to be very demanding and we're not going to rely on rove, but Medvar of Amurim says the Gemara when there's one rove, but if you could add another rove, that's enough to satisfy the requirement of my loss of use. Does it change anything statistically? Absolutely not.
But I mean, yeah, if you've got a city, let's say 1,000 people in the city, the other side comes along and there's 50 people in the city, there's a break of 50.
And they're two separate population groups. So, you know, whatever the rove is here, the rove is here, whatever the rove is here, the rove is there. We don't know where the boel came from. Now I skipped one line of the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know who came to whom. Okay? And here I want you to take a look at Tosfos, Divrei Maskil Dilma. You have that Tosfos? There's a concept of Ozla Ihi Legabaihu. Let's say a woman was raped, not outside the city, as our Mishnah would have it, but inside the city. Now, inside the city again, where was she raped? Did the incident happen out in the streets, in the backyards, or did it happen inside the house? She may have gone inside a house, and a man raped her inside the house. That's called Dilma Oza Ozla Ihi Ligabayu. Pirish Litoch Besam. She went into the homes. Afilu B'toch Ha'ir Lo Choshev Kavua D'dami L'nimtza Bein HaChanuyos Lo Choshev Kavua. He says the following. If she didn't go into the house, she went into the city, and there the unfortunate incident happened, that's called Kol Deparish Miruba Parish. However, here, if she went into the city, that's called Dilma Ozla Iu Gilgabayu, but not only into the city, but even into the Beso, into the homes, you know, like Avon calling, if you know what I mean, then that's called Kol Kavua Kevetz Al Mechzadomi, because now the suffix is on the bias. Whose bias is it? The bias of a kosher, the bias of a posel? Again, what's the case of kavua? We've discussed this in the past. If you have 10 butcher shops in the town, one of them is treif, the other 9 are kosher. If you find a piece of meat in the city, you say call the parish, remove the parish. If on the other hand, you don't remember which store you went into, it's not that you find a piece of meat, you know, wrapped up, and you don't know where it came from. But you walked into a store, and you don't know which store you went into. If you went into a treif store, you were buying food for your dog. And you might as well get cheap food. It could be available. It doesn't have to be kosher. If on the other hand, you're buying food for your family, you went into a kosher store. I simply don't remember. That's called a suffix that's nolad bikfius. And when the suffix is nolad bikvius, the Torah says we don't apply the principle of rov, but rather kol kavua kmechtal mechtadomi. Here says Tosfos, if there's a possibility that she went into the house, now we have to know what is the status, what is the nature of the house. Is it the house of a kosher, the house of a apostle? We have different homes and so forth and so on. The goyim live here, the Jews live here. Usually they don't mix so much together, except for Arabs and Jews. This I found in all my travels that, you know, whenever you go to a Jewish neighborhood, you know, there's always an Arab neighborhood mixed in.
They eat the
kosher butcher shop.
Is this the same thing also, or is there logic? In other words, it sounds like
I have trouble finding a logic.
Right, that doesn't sound like
the Gemara actually derives it from Psuki.
Right, that doesn't sound like it's logical. No, you can make some argument each way.
No, I don't
here,
see.
But here,
it's again a statistic.
You're saying if this is a halachic construct, so here's another proof that all of this is working within a halachic construct.
Absolutely
logical.
The only logic that you can suggest here, but it's not going to work. It'll only work in very rare instances. If I have 2 categories of butcher shops in front of me, I'm going to make an intellectual decision which category I want to go into. The numbers are irrelevant. Meaning, if I want to get cheap meat, and I can find that in a non-kosher butcher shop because I'm feeding my dog, then it's irrelevant if there are 1,000 kosher butcher shops. I'm going to go to that 1 Italian butcher shop. Why? Because that's where I'm going to get the cheap meat. That's Kemech Tal Mechzadon. On the other hand, when I find a piece of meat in the street, called the Parsh Meruba Parsh means it's a statistical probability.
But we don't assume there's always that logic going on beforehand for that to be the case.
Yeah, we cannot assume, so I'll tell you why. Because the Gemara in Pesachim applies this distinction even into mice, Akbarim.
Right.
You know, you've got 10 piles of you know, Safek Chametz, Safek Matzah, right? So you have 9 chametz, let's say 9 matzah piles and 1 chametz pile. And the Akbar goes in and takes one out. The Gemara flies kol kavu kevetz al mech. So the Akbar is not making an intellectual decision here. He doesn't know whether it was less than 18 minutes or more than 18 minutes. So again, I can't tell you that the halach of kavu is logical, but it has a... It, it's not human rational logic, but it has a halachic rationale. And within the halachic universe, what we're saying is that in the case of kavua, I look at the kfius, and now when I look at the kfius, I divide it up into two categories. And that gives me mechz al mechz adami. On the other hand, when I find something out of the kfius, namely called the parish, then it's a pure statistical rov. From Rav Kivega's point of view, as we said before, rov is statistical, and that's very good.
And again, I'm not sure if I understand if she, if she enters a house and she's raped in a home, is that a different one? How does that?
Yeah, because then what you have is a suffix makom kvius. The suffix is in the bias. In other words, let's look at the city.
You say that that's in the wagon also, or
well, the Gemara rejects wagon. The Gemara says
you could say that about any makom. I mean, what makes a makom? In other words, if it's in a back alley in this
So that alley has no status whatsoever. It's neutral. It has no. It's a faceless. Has no personality. But what happens?
I would drag her into a Rishus HaYachid, that becomes...
I don't know if
it just sounds like...
No, you're asking me, did she physically enter into his house, or he grabbed her and put her and took her into her house? No, that's either, an excellent question.
No, but either way, you're saying once it's in a house, it takes on that...
That's a makom kvius. Then we're going to... The suffix is chal in the house.
If this guy drags her into someone's backyard and now is in Rishus HaYachid, but the halacha now changes in terms of rov. I mean, just again, let's.
I don't know. Again, you're asking about dragging, but let's just get the the simple case.
Or she happens to be there, and that's her.
No, I'm just saying, if she's in a place that's neutral, then we apply kol de parish. Why? We have all these batim. Here's where the goyim live. Here where the Jews live. Somebody came out of his house and was boel her. She's in a neutral zone. You're asking a more complicated question. What happens if the bull drags her into a makom kvius? I don't know. You know, we'd have to really get into
it. If she's in a home, is it a Jewish?
If the be'ila took place in a home, what was the nature of that home? That's what
if it's a Jewish home, so are we looking at that issue? Or because we don't know who did the rape.
Right. But we know the rape took place in a home. Yeah, we don't know which home.
But we're saying if it was a mezuzah on the door, are we saying that the percentage is now higher that it's a Jew?
Again, the case that we're dealing with. Again, you're very ingenious coming up with new cases. The classical case is we know she was raped in a home, but we don't know the nature of the home. We didn't see the mezuzah. We don't know which home it was. If I go into a butcher shop, if I know which butcher shop I went into, there's no suffering.
Okay.
I don't know which butcher shop I went into.
We just know it was a
if there was a mezuzah on the butcher shop, then I...
Okay.
You follow what I'm saying?
You're creating a double mitzvah.
I'm just understanding the case.
It's almost like the case we started off with the mikveh, the guy's tummy. But we know the mikveh started the offense kosher. There was a chazak in the mikveh and a chazak in the other. And you've got two chazak.
Two chazak is kosher.
In this case, we just know it happened in a home, but we don't have the information which home happened.
Exactly.
And now
we're wondering which home it happened. So we're looking at all the homes.
And now this changes the status
of the suffix, because now the suffix is in kvius. It's in the house.
Again, it sounds like more of a halachic concept.
Definitely. Absolutely. And the Gemara derives it from Psukim.
Okay.
And in fact, if you want to take a look here, the Gemara has a case here. If you count up from the bottom of the Amud, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I would say about 20 lines up from the bottom, Tisha Tzfardim v'sheretz Echad Beinehem. So you have a group of Shratzim, nine of which are tahorim, those are called tzfaradim, and one of his asheretz. V'noga bi echad mehem v'eini yedeh beiz enoga. So can anybody guess what to live without looking what the halach is going to be?
It should be okay.
No, because again, you don't know which one you touch. So where is the suffix? It's like the case of the butcher shop. You don't know which butcher shop you went into. That's a suffix b'kfius. Again, if one of these...
You could look at it that way, you look at the other. I mean,
listen carefully.
Yeah.
If one of these animals, right, jumps out and stands on my head, I can assume that animal came from the rove. That's called kol de parish, meruva parish. But if I go into the Makom HaSafek,
in other words, going in, are they,
going in meaning that you have,
are they just sitting out?
Yeah, but they're all sitting in their place kavua, they're not moving. So now I go in and I don't know where I went into.
They're hopping around a bit. There's far. I mean,
so that would be called that might be called parish and muru parish. Again,
but
you have to know the following.
They aren't so kavua.
Okay, I don't know the case, but anyway, Tishat Sfar de Vishar, etc. Here, I'll give you another case. Maybe this will be a little bit easier. The Gemara says the following. Okay, let's get this case down. Zorak Evan Lego. A man throws a stone into a crowd of people. Okay? And the Gemara has the following two scenarios. Scenario number one. Tisha Knanim. The Echad Yisrael Beinehem. So we've got 9 non-Jews and 1 Jew. So the Gemara says, L'chorah, in such a case, you could assume that he killed the Knani, because the robe tells you he killed the Knani. Lo Tzricha, in the other case, Tisha Yisraelim, U'Knani Echad Beinehem. Okay? It's 9 Yisraelim and 1 Knani. And the Gemara wants to know what happens if you throw a stone and somebody is killed. Says the Gemara, Havile Knani Kavua, that one Knani is Kavua. Can all these people are sitting wherever they're sitting. V'chol Kavua kemechtzal mechtzadami. Even though the rove tells you that you killed a Jew and therefore you should be put to death. No, we're not going to put you to death because it's called Kavua kemechtzal mechtzadami. And here the Gemara is fascinating. The Gemara says, if it's kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzah, we can't put you to death. Why? Because safek nefashis lahakel. What is safek nefashis lahakel? So if you take a look at Rashi, 3 lines up from the bottom, dinei nefashis lahakel, davitzilu ha'edak siv. Now wait a second. I don't get it. I'm an Amoritz. I don't know the pasuk in the parsha of Gol Adam that says Vitzilu Ha'edim. I never saw that pasuk. You're telling me that based on the halach of Kavua, we have a suffix of Palgal Palga, Mechtzal Mechtza. I don't know, therefore, if he killed a Jew or if he killed a guy. Forget about the pasuk Vitzilu Ha'edim. What are you going to do with this guy who threw the stone? What would you do with him? Are we going to put him to death? Are you following my question?
Yeah, well, the Gemara says we prefer not to put people to death.
Yeah, why not? Because Vitzilu Ha'edim, state and pasuk, Vitzilu Ha'edim, the business to save them.
Right.
I don't know that pasuk. But what was the Havavi that you could put him to death? You don't know if he killed a Jew. There's a 50% chance that he killed a Jew, 50% chance he killed a guy, and you're going to put him to death? Name. I'm not going to put him to death. Yeah. Why? Because state and pasuk, Vitzilu Ha'edim. I need Vitzilu
Ha'edim. Yeah, it says he killed a Jew. When it comes to killing people, we're going to take a harsher position. You're going to get killed. Even a 50-50, you're going to get killed.
But I don't.
By the way, we do.
I don't need that.
Yes, you do. In other words, if someone's negligent and kills somebody,
yeah,
do you go to jail for that? Why not say, well, that's
no,
that's
I'm saying
when it comes to killing.
Well, I want to know something. In a secular court, Lahavdi, is there a legal system here?
Yes.
Let Eben Paskin in this because he's very familiar. You have
a
50.
When it comes to killing,
you have a. What do you mean you're machmir? I want to know what human logic would dictate. You have a 50% chance that this guy murdered someone. 50% chance they didn't murder someone. You're going to put him to death? Give him the chair?
Reverse on my friend killed somebody accidentally here in Israel. Killed somebody accidentally.
Oh, that's terrible.
Crash.
Wow.
He's a rabbi. He went to jail for 6 months. For that. Now, wouldn't you say, let's be lenient? In other words, let's Vitzilu Zaida. He doesn't go to jail.
But why? I don't say, is there a 50% chance they didn't kill the guy?
One second.
He's killed a Jew.
I know that, but we don't know if the stone is going to kill him. When he throws the stone.
Why not say that we are make, in other words, that we find a way not to go to jail somebody in that case?
Byron, I don't know if we're just not communicating, or we're both saying the exact same thing in different words. I mamish don't know.
No, you're saying obvious that you wouldn't put somebody. I don't think it's so obvious. Because you can take the opposite position when it comes to killing somebody.
Yeah.
50-50, and you killed somebody, we're going to be machmir that you're going to...
But we don't know if you're guilty of the crime.
It doesn't make a difference. When you
so you're going to put someone to death, and you don't know if he's guilty?
At 50-50, yes.
At 50-50, yes, Evan, is there serious. Is such a... Is there is such a... Is there under the... Under the heavens, is there a system of law in England, in America? I don't care where. Even I'll throw in South Africa into the thing. Even in South Africa, I don't think they would put someone to death. I don't understand you. What's the havamina that you would put someone to death when you don't know if he's guilty?
If my child did something,
you know, if you had 90%, you know, look, let's say for example, you know. Like even in juries and so on, if there's evidence and the evidence is, you know, even there, I think you need beyond a shadow of a doubt. What's it called? Beyond reasonable doubt. You know, here's a 50-50.
This has happened to my family. The child had did something seriously wrong, and we weren't sure about it. Mother and father, me and my wife.
Right.
And it was something that was serious. We punished that child.
But was there negligence? Was the child negligent? Do you understand my question?
I don't know if they're negligent or not. We weren't sure what happened. But it was that serious of an issue that they did something wrong, that the child, that we considered that child guilty.
I don't understand. If it was 50-50, I look, this is not a parenting class, but if it was 50-50, no, Have idanes chaver lekavschus applies even to parents, you know what I'm saying?
Something that's not... He had a straw as well. I mean, it's not just that there was a 50-50 situation. He killed a Jew. At the time he threw it, he didn't know it was 50-50. He had a straw. So there's reglamentation over that he took the risk of killing a Jew.
Very good. Okay, very good. He took a risk of killing a Jew.
He's already involved in something. That's
right, but
that's not justified
putting him to death.
My child that we punish, you're already involved in something. You're telling us you didn't quite do it, but we hear all these, you know, leading up to it. We feel that you did something wrong here. Now, it's possible the halacha would say when it comes to killing somebody and you're throwing rocks to a group of people, you know, we're going to put you to death for that. Even a 50-50.
Okay.
And that's why...
So I want to share with you an insight here, the Brisker Rav.
Yeah.
Ravel. And this I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapiro, in the name of the Brisker Rav. Rav Moshe was my Rebbe after a year in Kerem Yavne. I went to Beis HaTalmud for 2 years, and he was my Rebbe for 2 years. You heard of Rav Moshe Shapiro?
Sure.
So he used to go in and out by the Brisker Rav. He was a youngster, I think he was in his teens at the time. So the Brisker Rav said the following. Let's go back to the parasha of Yitzilu HaEder. What happened over here? What happened over there is that there's a parasha called Goel Hadam. And the Goel Hadam, because of a pasuk that says Ein Lo Damim, and we spent a lot of time on this in Masechet Makis, he is allowed, and according to one Tana, he's even obligated to kill the Rotzeach.
Right.
Okay. But the Torah addresses a scenario in which it's not clear, beyond reasonable doubt, right? It's not clear that this person that the Goel Hadam wants to kill actually killed his relative. Okay? So the Torah says in such a case that let's bring this accused murderer, about which we have some doubts, into Beis Din. And in such a case, if Beis Din cannot come to any definite conclusion, then v'hitzilu ha'eda, Beis Din has to save this Safek Rotzeach from the hands of the Goel Hadam. So far, so good? That's the parasha. Says the Brisker Rav, why is the Torah telling me v'hitzilu ha'eda? If not for v'hitzilu ha'eda, this Safek Rotzeach, if he's killed by the Goel Hadam, what would you do with the Goel Hadam? Can we put the Goel Hadam to death? Now once again, you have the same Safek. If the original guy killed him, then the Goel Hadam did exactly what he's allowed to do, maybe even what he's obligated to do. We don't know. If he didn't kill him, then the Goel Hadam is a Rotzeach, and he should be put to death. Says the Brisker Rav, Dosh state, that's what the pasuk means, V'tzilu ha'edom. We're not going to consider this Sofek Rotzeach as a Sofek. We're going to consider him as a Vadai innocent. The Torah is not operating here with Sofek. V'tzilu ha'edom engenders a new din Vadai. And the nafkamina is going to be that Bezdin is going to protect this guy from the Gol Adam to the nth degree, such that if the Gol Adam is warned, and he will be warned, that if he takes the life of this Sofek Rotzeach, he, the Gol Adam, will be put to death. Is doch memele rabosai for Vitzilu Eider is a gewaldige chiddush. What Vitzilu Eider is saying, not just that don't put someone to death if you have doubts. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that if you have doubts, then he's innocent. And he's innocent b'toras vadai. And the nafkamina is, if somebody were to kill this person, and you had doubts, wavering back and forth, whether or not the halacha of ein lo damim would apply, as far as somebody who knocks him off, the answer is, yesh lo damim, v'yitzilu ha'eda, he's innocent as anyone who's walking in the streets, and if he's killed, we're going to kill the murderer, put him to death. Beautiful brisker up, no? I mean, again, if you climb up to the abstract worlds, you know, the Torah...
How do we understand the halacha of killing somebody that killed the shogeg?
That's a fascinating question, but Rabban, you were with us for the Sechta Nachas, were you?
I was not.
So we spent a lot of time on this, you know, that's like how long did we spend on this?
I'm just saying, in other words, this idea of a safek that you're going to kill somebody, in other words, here you're killing somebody who killed the shogeg. There was the Torah taking a very stringent view, a radical view that you can kill somebody who killed accidentally.
Right. That is true. But what my discussion was, V2A, where you don't know.
Is there a simple answer to that?
But the answer to that is that the Torah holds shogeg, a person who's a shogeg, to be responsible. He is responsible. And
would you find any court in the world that would say that?
I don't know. Evan would have to help me out.
What? But we're not saying, no, that's not what we're saying. That's not the halacha. It's not halacha of Shia. That's not.
Yes, it is.
Is it only in the case of Shia
Absolutely.
That you're not killed?
Like, for example, the Gemara has the fine distinction.
Yeah.
In the classical case of Horeg v'Shogeg,
would any court of law allow that?
Wait, let me go slowly. In the classical case of Horeg v'Shogeg,
yeah.
Reuven is chopping down trees with an axe.
Right.
Shimon is on the bottom on the ground level of the forest, and something shoots out and kills Shimon. Now, in one particular scenario, which is a Mishnah in Makis, what happened is that the head of the axe.
Yeah.
Separated itself from the handle, and it's barzel, it's made of stone, and hit the guy, and he died.
Right.
So the Gemara says the following. If he checked the axe before this happened, he doesn't go into golus. That's called karov li'onis. Again, he could have checked it 50 million times, more, this, that, the other thing. We don't go into that. As long as he did what we call due diligence, and he checked out the axe, he's potter. If, on the other hand, he's chopping away without checking the axe out, and again, you have to know, you know, when he's chai bedika and this and that and the other thing, then he's considered a negligent shogeg.
But is Gol Adam only in the case of Shia? Is that
only in the case of Shia? If it's Karov Leonis, then. But you see, initially, when the murder takes place, the Gol Adam is, you know, he's all, his blood is boiling. He wants to take. So that's what the Mishnah says, that the Gol Adam is ready to kill this guy.
Yeah.
And what we have to do is we have to get this guy into Beis Din. And we have to judge whether or not he is the shogeg case. Then the Gemara says we try to escort him to the Ir Miklat. If somehow the Gol Adam is able to kill this guy, either I'm saying outside the Ur Miklat, either before he gets the Ur Miklat, or possibly if he steps out of the Ur Miklat, there's a whole Mishnah, let's say he steps into a foliage, you know, on a tree, the foliage is inside this, or it's outside, and the Ikro Basa go. But the main line is that he has to protect himself, this Rotzeach, for the rest of his life. And how does he protect himself? By remaining within literally the walls of the boundaries of the Ur Miklat.
I mean,
you know, the whole question about a rofe, you know, a physician who kills a patient, whether he should be chayv golos or not.
Right.
If there's an element of negligence, let's say he doesn't live up to standard procedures, you know, that you can treat a patient for X, but you know that treatment may require investigating the history of another organ of his body, like his heart. If he has heart trouble, he's not ready for that surgery. So if a surgeon is negligent, he doesn't put the guy, it doesn't, what were you going to say, Ramon? I'm sorry.
Now, as I mentioned, this friend of mine, the courts here in Israel found that he was negligent. In other words, that he was going too fast,
right?
Or that he didn't stop. And
so back in the old days, he probably would have gone. Again, I don't know, there are many complicated halachas and goals, right. But in theory, you know, in abstract terms, such a guy who should have stopped at a red light, or the trouble is, I'm not saying this case or yours, but I'm saying if he jumps a red light, I had a chiddush.
He wasn't jumping a red light.
No, I'm just saying, not your case. I'm just telling you. I had a chiddush when we were learning Makkos that such a person would have to spend his entire life protecting himself, looking over his shoulders for the Gol Adam.
Yeah.
Meaning there's no Ur Miklat for him.
Uh-huh.
Because that's called Karav L'Mezid.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know, sometimes the Pashiyah is so blatant.
Right.
So I don't know your case. Your case probably is much more subtle of a negligence.
Yeah.
But
Rabosei,
how much time do you have? I don't even know. What time do we start? I don't even...
I think it may be...
Maybe we should call it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Rabosei. So we'll call it here. No, I could go on. Actually, I was thinking of showing you another Mishnah in the second parak. Maybe we'll just take 2 minutes. I'll show you the Mishnah. And I was thinking maybe tonight we would... I was learning the Mishnah, but then I got caught up with this Rashash, so I wanted to share it with you. On Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, there's an absolutely fascinating Mishnah about 9 lines down from the top about what's called Kiyum Shtaros.
We're going to be learning this coming year, right?
Because I'm hoping, but I'm just praying and hoping that we'll get to Daf Yud Ches, because there are a lot of heavy sugyas and we only get together once a week. But in Mirtz Hashem, I hope we'll get to this sugya. The case is Kiyum Shtaros, which means that any time a document is produced in Beis Din as evidence against the defendant, that document has to be established and authenticated through a process called Kiyum Shtaros. Which means, in the simplest case, there are other cases, we invite the Eidim who are signed on the Shtar into Beis Din. We show them the document upon which apparently their signatures are attached. They have to testify that that's their signature. That's called Ksav Yadenu Huzeh. And the Mishnah here addresses a fascinating case in which we invited the Eidim and they indeed admitted that's our signature, but the Shtar is possible. For example, we signed it under duress.
Mm-hmm.
We signed it when we were psulim, we were related. Subsequently, there was a divorce in the family, whatever, we're not related anymore. Or Ktarim Ayidu, we signed it before we were bar mitzvah. And the Mishnah here establishes a major, major principle called Pesha Asar or Pesha Hidir, which means that since only through their testimony does the Shtar become a valid Shtar, the Kiyum Shtaros is contingent on them, therefore they're believed to invalidate the Shtar. But if we could be Makayim the Shtar without these two Eidim, for example, we can compare their signatures to another Shtar, which was already Makuyam in another Beis Din, and by doing the comparison of signatures, we validate the Shtar, then when they come in and say, yeah, we signed the Shtar, but we were Ketan, and they're not believed. They don't have a Peshos and Peshit. So this is a fascinating situation. I'm hoping, you know, when it comes to learning, you always have to say, because otherwise it's a Neder Gadol Nadol Lil Ke Yisrael.